welcome to Inspired Island, where every episode we sit down with someone living an inspired life here on Vashon Island in Puget Sound. From world-class artists and musicians to chefs and business owners, our little rural island has it all. I'm your host, Grace McCray, a new full-time Vashon Island resident, and thank you for joining me on this journey to discover why Vashon is such an inspired island. Well, hello, everyone. Today, we have the one and only Chris Ballou in the studio. Welcome to the show, Chris.
That's the in-studio audience of one.
Yes.
Me.
Very, cheering, very good audience.
Cheering for myself.
Excellent. And if you're a music lover or you've lived in the Pacific Northwest for a while, Chris Ballou needs zero introduction. You probably remember Chris as the lead singer, songwriter, and multi-instrumentalist of the popular band Presidents of the United States of America, which climbed to the top of the national music charts with their catchy and eclectic hits like Lump, Peaches, and Kitty. But if you have kids, you might know Chris as Casper Baby Pants, the name under which Chris has released, I believe, 14 albums. Is that right?
15, 16th Whoa. Coming out in August. Yeah.
So it's counting. Awesome.
Yeah.
And Casper Baby Pants brings kids, and maybe even more importantly, their parents, joyful and smart music for the whole family to enjoy. And I'm really excited to get to know the man behind it all. So, Chris, where does your story begin?
My story begins at the hospital.
Okay.
My story begins in, Bellevue, sort of Washington. I lived on Yarrow Point, which is actually one of the three points, and it's actually its own little town, technically. We had like our own 4th of July parade when I was a kid, and we had a mayor and a little town hall, and so it felt like a teeny tiny town, but it really was kind of Bellevue was my jam. So I was born in 1965, and what can I say? I had a really wonderful childhood, like safe, happy, great best friends lived down the street, you know, running around all day outside. Parents didn't know where we were, kind of childhood.
All-American, really, yeah.
Yeah, lots of Euro Point at the time had kind of fallen in this, parts of it had kind of fallen into disrepair.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the olden days, in the 1800s, that's where rich families from Seattle would build little cabins, and they'd set them way back from the street because that was what rich people did with their houses. They set them back from the street. And so there were all these funky, creepy, you know, like the trust fund great grandson of, you know, whoever originally earned all the money and built the summer house was hoarding newspapers in these old cabins.
Wow.
I had a paper route when I was a kid, and I used to have to go collect money from these scary little cabins set back. Of course, all those are gone now because they all got torn down, and Yarrow Point's a very different place. But there were a lot of vacant lots, you know, lots full of blackberry brambles that we would crawl through.
Wow.
And lots of good adventures on Yarrow Point when I was a little kid.
I bet.
Yeah, so happy childhood. And then I moved away to go to college in New York, so I got a bunch of East Coast times, living in New York and Boston. And then and during that time is when music started really happening. I started playing when I was 4 years old, playing piano.
Okay, I was going to ask when it first surfaced.
Yeah, I was 4 years old. I was playing piano and kind of immediately getting groomed to be a concert pianist. That was going to be my path. Or join the Northwest Boys Choir, which I actually got accepted to and quit on the same day because they were going to go on tour. And even as a 7 or 8 year old when I got accepted, they were going to go to Europe. And I was just like, I don't want to go on tour.
Really?
No, not at all. I didn't want to leave my friends and go.
Your paper route?
My paper route and my vacant lots and my blackberry brambles and my creepy, you know, summer cottages to go to Europe.
No.
It freaked me out. And in fact, that would foreshadow my feelings about touring when the rock band became a big deal, because I didn't want to tour then either.
And did you have siblings?
Yes. My mom and dad had a set in their 20s and then a set in their 40s. So I have an older brother and sister who are like 16 and 18 years older than me, and then a younger brother who's 20 months younger. So I was kind of an older child, or I was the oldest, but I was also very much a middle child.
Mm-hmm. And did your family play a lot of music? Did you have
my dad played guitar. Mm. My mom always wished she played piano, but she didn't really. She could pick stuff out, but They, more than playing music, they influenced me in that my dad really was had his roots in like hillbilly music, country music. His famous idea of what is and isn't country music is if there's drums, it's not country music. So, you know, if it was just a hillbilly band with feet stomping and gathered around a mic, that's his scene. So
okay.
He was a purist. So he kind of turned me on to that rootsy element. And then my mom was very much into classical music and used to take me to the symphony when she had season tickets with a friend of hers. And when her friend couldn't make it, I was her stand-in friend for classical music. So I went maybe 3 or 4 times a year.
Wow. And that would be the Seattle Symphony?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
As a little kid, you know, and I would always fall asleep.
Oh, yeah. So relaxed.
It was great. I loved it. So classical and hillbilly kind of smashed themselves together into me. And
okay.
And in the music I do as Casper, I totally get to use those influences very clearly. Like I'm using classical melodies and elements, and I'm using old time country music and folk music and, you know, rootsy stuff.
Yeah,
well.
I've thought that when listening to Casper Baby Pants, it's like sort of music you haven't yet heard. So in that way, it's very new. It has like a new age vibe, but yet there's something very classic to it too.
Yeah, and yeah. A lot of that is sampling that old stuff that has kind of survived. And by sampling, I mean like, you know, old public domain folk music is just sitting there.
Right.
You can take it and chop it up and hack it away, you know, hack it into pieces and reassemble your own little monster.
Yeah.
So a lot of times I'll just take all the old lyrics, like Pop Goes the Weasel, I basically took all the lyrics out and just rewrote all my own. Now it's about a weasel and an eagle who write a hit song in 1960s London, and they're under pressure from their record company to write a second hit song to keep up with the Beatles.
This needs to be made into a movie, too.
Yeah,
not just
does.
A song, not just 3 minutes.
I was pretty proud of myself with that song because I managed to rhyme weasel with eagle, Beatles, illegal, beagle. I can't remember all the rhymes, but boy, that was a jigsaw puzzle to make a story and have all those rhymes. It was super satisfying when I finished that sucker.
And all the music I'm familiar with through Presidents and Casper Baby Pants, I mean, your lyrics are just so smart, and a lot of them, the rhyming is just incredible. Did that surface early? Were you writing songs? Were you sort of good with words when you were little?
I remember I wrote like 4 songs when mm-hmm. I was really young, maybe like 12 or 13. And I had 2 boom boxes and I was kind of bouncing back and forth, you know, trying to multi-track crudely. And I made a 4-song cassette and I remember listening to it in the car when we drove to the store. But then I lost that tape.
No.
And those 4 songs, I think, were basically Casper Baby Pants songs. They had the same vibe I'm reaching for when I make Casper songs. It's kind of well-constructed but silly thing. I think if I found the 4-song cassette, I would probably be disappointed. And it's probably better that I've lost it because I'm always striving to get back to it.
Yeah. To me, it seems like you haven't been afraid to just follow the music that you like. Compared to a lot of other musicians that I've just read about or seen documentaries about, I feel like you've been able to keep to that core, like that child that was writing those 4 songs. Was there ever a time where you really deviated from what you wanted to do? Did you ever capitulate to some of the industry pressures?
Well, yeah, the Presidents really were, I mean, not the music, especially the debut record was totally out of my soul, but
yeah.
The ensuing cyclone of responsibility and commitments that took us away from our lives felt bad to me, like really didn't like it. I wanted to break up the band immediately. I wanted to pull a Sex Pistols and just say, all right, let's break up right as our debut is shattering the charts, if I can say that without stumbling. Shattering the charts. But, you know, I capitulated to the pressure of like, no, you got to go on tour and you got to do this and that. And, you know, and I saw the appeal, but deep down, I did not want to do that. So I had a little voice in me that was saying, like, there's some other kind of music you're supposed to be doing.
Mm.
This is great, and congratulations, the little voice would say, but there's something else, and you have to keep digging. And so I did for like 15 or 20 years as the Presidents did its thing. I just on the side was constantly experimenting and trying to figure out what this other thing was. And yeah, eventually over 20 years, it got smaller and more intimate and more acoustic and more silly and more kind of innocent.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I met my second wife, Kate, and I looked at her artwork and I went, that's it. That's it. I need to make music that comes from the same planet as that artwork. That's where I'm trying to live. And so I wrote music really inspired by her artwork. And then literally like a cartoon light bulb went off over my head, like, ah, I'm supposed to be making kids' music. Of course. And it was just like this elated, it was such a relief, not only to find it, but to find something that has nothing to do with the culture of cool or trying to be hot or whatever, the flavor of the month or anything. It's a perennial genre, you know, like every, you know, I make music for 0 to 5 year olds, 0 to 6 year olds. So every 5 or 6 years, my entire fan base grows out of me and I get a new fan base. So it's like this perennial thing that just goes on and on and on. I love it.
Yeah.
I don't have to be, you know, cool or try to be cool anymore.
Very freeing, yeah.
Because I've never been cool.
I think a lot of people would argue against
that
statement.
Yeah, I guess. Well, yeah, that's true. I mean, we were the flavor of the month there for a minute. Well, and there's an analogy I like to use, which is really this visualization I had in my head. My whole childhood, as I made music and wrote songs and teenage and started being in bands and stuff, I had this, like, you know, dream of this image of like, if I can just get into that metaphorical room, that backstage room where everything's great and you're famous and you're successful and you're creatively fulfilled and you're loved as a songwriter and all that. And I got there. I got to go in that room. But the first thing I saw when I went in that room was a little door to another room. And I knew that that led to a room with another door and a room with another door and a room with another door. And it was like this M.C. Escher never-ending pressure cooker that I just wanted out of.
That's awesome to have the wherewithal to understand that
And
to listen to that little voice, eventually.
Eventually, yeah. Yes. In fact, I broke up the band in 98 for that reason. I was like, I got to get out of here. I got to figure out what this other thing is that I'm supposed to be doing. And it's like you can't find the job you want while you have the job you don't want. You got to free yourself.
Right.
So that's why I quit the band in 98. And I did that very hot-headedly and emotional and, you know, like, I quit, you know, and it was intense. Then we got back together 5 years later, and that was really wonderful because we got to kind of respect our legacy and really experience the songs in a new way. I always said, like, when we got back together, it was like being in the best president's cover band ever. Because I felt like I didn't write the songs in a way somehow. They had a life of their own, and that feeling made it so we wanted to make new records, and so we made a bunch of new records. And then eventually in 2015, I got to a point where I was like, okay, the arc has arced. I feel like now I did a lot of therapy, and I kind of understood my relationship to my previous decisions and how, you know, I'm a people pleaser, which is simultaneously my greatest strength and my greatest weakness.
Yep.
So with all this, you know, self-awareness to back me up, I quit the band very dispassionately and very logically and very clearly. And I had told those guys, Jason and Andrew, in the 5 or 6 years leading up to when I actually quit, it's coming. I'm going to quit. I sat them down. I'm like, every time I get on a plane, it's for you guys. I don't want to do it. That's not to say that I didn't enjoy playing the music and the songs. If you get me up on a stage, once I'm there, once all the boring parts are over, like airports and buses and stuff, I'm good. Part of finding the sound I wanted is, and the Casper Baby Pants thing was also finding out who I really am and what I really, you know, because I've always strived for transparency in my creative output. I don't want to put on a persona.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Casper is me. It's exactly me. So That's why I have 16 records, because when you find that, there's no hurdles.
Yeah,
there's
no resistance. There's no resistance. Just flowing.
There's no friction. Just, there it is. Yeah.
And it sounds like you've had a lot of inspiration from your wife's work.
Yes.
Kate, would you mind explaining for those who haven't seen her artwork what it's like and why it inspires Casper Baby Pants?
Well, first of all, go to kateendle.com, K-A-T-E-E-N-D-L-E.com. so you can see it, but it's collage. It's paper, cut paper for the most part. She does some painting stuff too. And it's these little animals. It's animals. They're funny. They're cute. It's very well constructed. It's, you can tell she understands how to draw, you know, because these aren't really, these are abstracted, but they're, she also has one foot in reality. Like if I write a song where I have a seal doing something anthropomorphic, even she'll be like, well, a seal wouldn't swim with a dolphin, or I'll have them holding hands or something. And she's like, no, they wouldn't do that because one's fresh water and one's salt or something like that. Not exactly that, but she'll come at me with some sort of real world reason why this silly song can't happen. And that translates to her art too. There's a little bit of, there's definitely whimsy, but there's also reality in it somehow.
Straddles both worlds.
It's like you can tell she really knows how to draw. You can tell she's putting the animals in a scene where they would maybe be actually found, even though something weird is also happening in the picture. So anyway, there's that kind of surrealness and realness, which I love. And she's just the most delightful human being in the world. So we are extremely silly together. We talk in ridiculous nonsense most of the day. I'll say something stupid in the kitchen and she'll just pick up on it, and we'll just, pretty soon we're singing this stupid song about a crumb.
That's a great way to move through life.
It is. It's great. I mean, silly is wonderful.
Yeah.
I haven't met the Dalai Lama, but I hear he's pretty silly.
I've actually heard that too. Very great sense of humor. Yeah.
Yeah.
Life would be sad without it. So
that's true.
Yeah. And I also wanted to ask you about the name Casper Baby Pants and what the story behind that is.
Yeah, that was, I was living in Boston and I was hanging out with this guy, Mark Sandman. He was the two-string slide bass player for a band called Morphine back in the day. And he eventually was generous enough to let me live with him, which was a big deal because he was kind of a private individual. And as we were living together, I started checking out his way of playing a two-string slide bass. And he had a version of his basses that was a guitar, and it had two strings on it. And I picked it up and just played it and felt like, oh my gosh, this is it, you know. And because of that connection, Mark and I started a band called Supergroup. And the idea with Supergroup is we had no songs when we stepped on stage. We made it all up live in front of everybody. We had a rotating cast of drummers, great stable of drummers that Mark had kind of in his hip pocket. The audience eventually started yelling songs, titles out, and we'd have to make up the song on the spot. And a lot of, some of those songs became Morphine songs, and some became President songs, actually, in the end. And so during that time, it was one winter, I didn't have a winter hat. And so,
but you need one in Boston.
You need one, especially when you don't have any hair like me. And so I went to this hippie store, kind of free clothing exchange place in Central Square, and found this hand-knitted pair of baby's pants and put them on my head. And they were beautiful. And you can see pictures of them online. You can see pictures of me and Mark playing the Supergroup thing, and I've got the baby pants on. So the fans of Supergroup caught on to the baby pants thing and started calling me Baby Pants. And kids in the neighborhood started calling me Baby Pants because I'd have to walk from the subway to where I lived with Mark. And it was, you know, the kids were like, yo, Baby Pants, where you going? And I had already made cassettes years earlier under the name Casper.
Okay.
With two A's. Casper became kind of like a weird nickname or some... it was a name I kind of wanted. I never really liked my first name, Chris. So
really?
I switched to Casper for a while, and I fell short of having my family call me Casper. Mm-hmm. But I definitely introduced myself as Casper to a bunch of people in the early 90s. And if I ever see those people again, they're always like, Casper. They call me Casper because that's who they think I am. Anyway, so I took the Casper from previous years and the baby pants from the neighborhood kids and the Supergroup fans and put them together. And so in the early 90s, I was Casper Baby Pants in that band.
Wow.
Yeah. And so when I came to the conclusion that I should be making children's music, my next thought was, well, what do I call it? Do I call it Chris Ballou? Do I make up a band name? So then I remembered, oh, I'm already Casper Baby Pants. It's already there.
It's brilliant.
Yeah. It's like one of the many crumbs that were laid out along the path that led me to Casper Baby Pants is the name. One of the reasons I have 16 records out is that I'm going back over all these songs that never worked with any band I was in and that were kind of half constructed, and realizing that's trying to be a Casper song. Oh, and that's trying to be a Casper song. Oh, and that one, you know, that one I love, but I never figured out that's a Casper. So yeah. I'm kind of retooling a lot of old bits from my journey.
Where have you been housing ideas or half-written songs? Do you have notebooks or is
no? It's audio, little audio bits.
Oh, okay.
Everything from like, in fact, Lump was an audio bit that I don't even remember making up. And what I do is I compile these audio bits into back in the day onto cassettes from little mini tape, like little micro cassette recorders. And I was cleaning my room in 1993 or 4. I had one of my little collections of tidbits on. I like to kind of put them on when I'm doing the dishes or doing something else and wait for something to grab me.
Uh-huh.
And all of a sudden I heard my voice singing, she's lump, she's in my head and all that stuff. And it didn't have any verses, but it just had that. And I was like, what? That's interesting. Maybe I should work on that. And so I don't even remember making it up.
Wow.
Initially. So it's weird. So anyway, that's why I always save all these little nuggets.
Yeah, I'm not an artist in really any way, but I was just at home in Massachusetts. I grew up in Massachusetts.
Ooh, Massachusetts. Yeah. So you're a masshole?
Yes, exactly. Proud of it. And
nice. I'm sort of a masshole. I was there an
honorary, long
enough.
Yeah.
I'm an honorary, so go ahead.
Yeah, and my parents just moved houses, and I had been there since I was about 7 years old. And we are going through all these boxes to kind of downsize for my parents. And some of the writing and artwork I did as a kid was just so good that I'm glad we kept that because I would never have thought it was in me somewhere.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's really cool when parents keep that stuff. And then I kept a lot of my kids' artwork and some of their homework. And I'm waiting for them to kind of get a little settled and then I'm going to dump it all on them.
Yeah, and just briefly, what made you go to Massachusetts? I feel like Boston isn't necessarily a hub for somebody who is born in the Seattle awesome music scene to go to Boston.
Well, let's see. I went to school at SUNY Purchase in New York.
Okay.
So
the
very last semester of my senior year, a visiting artist came and taught a class that I took, and he lived in Boston. And at the end of the year, he said, if anybody wants a job, I'll give you a job. Just come to Boston and be my artist assistant. He did these big, gosh, how can I describe it? They're these big architectural installations with light beams where you would break the light beam and it would play either a sound or a note. And he did them like, say, in the subways. So when the subway cars came in, they broke all the beams and played a tune. And then people waiting for the train could reach up and break the beams and kind of create a piece of music while they waited for the train as the whole station reached up and did this thing. It would be a unique moment of music. So, and he did a staircase where the beams were on each step. And so I worked making models for him of, like, say he did an installation in a giant five-story open lobby with elevators, and the elevators were hitting the beams. So I had to build like a mock-up of the lobby in whatever 1/72nd scale. So that he could, you know, so those are my job. Or it'd be like crate up all this, build crates for this artwork, which is going to Germany. So I'd have to build crates or mirrorize a satellite dish, which I actually had to do. I had to come up with a jig that would work cutting mirrored plexiglass to go into, in pieces, to go into a satellite dish.
Wow. It's like working for a mad scientist
something. Yeah. His name is Christopher Janney.
Wow.
You should check him out. I love his work. He's part musician, part artist, part architect. So me and the drummer in my band that I had in college, we both moved to Boston, and then the rest of the band kind of followed, and we had a continuation of college band times in Boston. And then that's how I met Mark and then got involved in that, his whole scene. And yeah.
Wow.
And then one day I woke up in Boston after a few years and I went, it was winter. I was sick and cold and living in a weird little apartment, and I just woke up one morning and went, I'm from Seattle.
What am I doing
what
here?
What am I doing? Why am I killing myself with this heat and this cold and this, you know, drudgery? So I bought a VW van and it had no heat, and it was January, so I had to go all the way down south and all the way across the warm part of the country and then all the way up.
So you got back to Seattle. When about did Vashon come into the picture for you?
Yeah, back to Seattle in the early 90s and then poured all the joy of being home into the songs that became the debut record. So that's like the soul of that record is me rediscovering Seattle and feeling at home and feeling at ease. And so that's in there. And then that exploded and one thing led to another. I married my first wife. I had kids. She's actually part of the Casper scene too because she, her name's Mary Lynn Ballou, and she's now a family and couples therapist. So look her up because she's very talented. Yeah. She came up with Run Baby Run in the car when my son was, you know, unhappy and crying in the car. She started going, run, baby, run, 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 run. And he went, oh, you know, he just like relaxed. My reason for making the Casper stuff is to be helpful for that family in the car. I literally imagine a family in a car in August in a 5-hour traffic jam leaving Yosemite National Park, and they're all hungry and tired and mad, and they all have to pee. And you should be able to put in the song, and it should help. And so I literally mix songs with that. I'm in the car with that family as I work on that. And that's Mary Lynn's influence. So Mary Lynn had that influence. Kate had the global influence. And so I couldn't have done it without either of my wives. I needed both of my wives to get here.
Exactly.
So so she and I broke up. And then only like a year and a half later, I met Kate. And you know, we started dating and immediately realized we were built for each other and got married. And so Vashon, actually, to back up a little bit, it figured in high school. My future bandmate in the Presidents, his parents had a little beach cabin here on Vashon.
Oh,
so
okay.
We would come over here and play music and hang out on the beach. And so that was my first kind of like chilling on the beach kind of Vashon. Oh, I see what Vashon's all about.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was kind of woven into those memories. And then so when it came time to kind of for Kate and I to think about an escape from the city, Vashon immediately came up. And we knew people that lived out here also a little bit. But mainly it was just that old association with the high school times. And so we bought a little cabin on Ober Beach. And it was a real like walk up kind of, you know, I was. When we had people over for dinner, they would like knock on the door and we'd open the door and they'd be like, hi, this is a beautiful place. basically after a couple of years in the cabin, we realized, okay, Vashon is definitely where we want to be eventually. It felt so good. And as we got to know more people here and tighter friendships and more of our friends started moving over, we could see a future here. So we were like, we got to sell the cabin and get somewhere else. And we, I don't know what it is with us and the universe, but we asked the universe for this place. And we looked at one house and bought this house that is just absolutely our dream. It needs a lot of work. We're actually, this winter, I think, we're going to be gutting it and building Kate a studio and building some other stuff. So it's not perfect, but the spot is just like, oh, you can just feel your soul unravel when you get to our house. And it's west-facing and overlooking the water and, you know, the peninsula on the other side. And from one, if you walk over to one corner of our place where Kate's studio will be, you can see the Olympic Mountains. So she'll get some mountains.
Wow.
So it's just fantastic. So that's, it's been an easy kind of, in fact, the cabin, I think, was the first place we looked at, too. I saw it online. And I just went, Kate, this is it. And we bought it. And then we found this other place. This is it. We bought it.
The universe is making it easy for you.
I know. Yeah. Down to the fact that we had this beautiful old maple tree in front of the Vashon house we're in now. And we're working with an architect trying to figure out how we're moving walls inside the house. And we're like, well, there's one spot where we want to take an outdoor space and make an indoor space, like put up a wall. But the root system of that old maple tree would not allow us to do it. And the maple tree was like a, you know, we had arborists over to the house to kind of check out our trees and stuff. And every time one would come over, they'd be like, oh my gosh, this maple tree should not exist. What a specimen. It's not supposed to be this big and healthy. But the snow we just had destroyed it.
No.
Like shattered it into like four pieces. And we were secretly happy. Because now we can build that wall and use that space that would be kind of dead zone outside. We can make it into like a zen room inside. And we didn't have the strength to destroy the tree, but the universe did. So Thank you, universe. So anyway, we have a good relationship with the universe, which I hope by talking about on the radio, I'm not destroying. I'm sorry, universe, if our relationship is a secret.
No. And does Vashon inspire any of your music these days?
Oh, yeah. Just, again, the spot we're in is so peaceful, and I just feel so at ease and so relaxed and taken care of by the atmosphere that inevitably that, you know, it's this. It really takes me back to living in Ballard with my friends before the presidents hit and when I was writing all those songs and this, like, easy life, like, hey, you know, let's, what are we doing tonight? I don't know, you know, let's go play Frisbee for a couple hours and we'll come back and, oh, look, people are coming over and bringing beer. Oh, let's fire out the barbecue. Hey, we're having a party. You know, it's just like flowing in one thing, flowing into another.
Yeah.
And that's what I get out of living here.
Beautiful.
It's like resetting to that wonderful life that I had to lose to go on the road and promote the songs and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like the beautiful life, the wonderful, easy life had an effect of making these songs, and the songs took me out of that life. So now I'm using the wonderful life to write songs, but I'm not touring. And I'm just playing in my backyard and taking care of my town and my people.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to say to everybody out there, you know, I toured for 23 years, and so I'm done. And if you want to see me and you don't live in Seattle, it's your turn.
Right, right. I mean, you do.
And people do it.
Yeah.
I get people.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
And you do a lot of shows, though, still. They're all Washington, pretty much, that I saw on your website.
Yeah, they're like Washington, Oregon, kind of. I'll do a trip. If the quality of life element is there, like I'm going to Montana this summer to play at a festival that Mike McCready from Pearl Jam is curating, and he's putting together this crazy super group, like Red Hot Chili Peppers people and Foo Fighters people and Pearl Jammy people and all that, and smashing together this group. So he wanted me to come out and play a kid's set early in the day, and I was like, yeah, that sounds good. I'll go to Big Sky, Montana and hang out with rock stars for 3 days. You bet. And then I'm doing a fundraiser for the Mona Foundation, which is Rainn Wilson from The Office's project, education for women and girls in third world countries. Excuse me. So that's I take the summers off. So technically these summer shows I wouldn't do, but I'm doing some. So,
if it sounds fun enough, then
yeah,
it's not
I don't
work.
Know. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Excellent.
So I don't tour, but I do accept interesting offers.
So you've never really loved the touring aspect, but do you like traveling? Like if you take the touring out of it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
My wife and I went to Japan last year and did a kind of a fancy tour of artist studios, ceramic artist studios in the countryside.
Oh, cool.
It was awesome. I spent my birthday in this old smoke-charred hut in the middle of the woods, in the middle of nowhere in Japan with this ancient ceramicist and his tiny, tiny wife. The kitchen was built to her proportions, so you couldn't even stand up in it.
Yeah, and you're a tall guy.
And they're bringing out bowls of dashi, and dashi is this like broth, bowls of dashi and vegetables and this big chunk of meat that he was cooking on a charcoal pit on the middle of the floor and just kind of like handing around, you know, utensils with meat and vegetables on the ends. And it was super magical.
Amazing.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, we love to travel. We travel. In fact, we're going to the East Coast for 3 weeks. We're going to Nantucket and Maine and Ohio just to travel, just to adventure. Katie and I have dreams eventually of having our own little van or RV or something, little tiny one.
Yep.
And just going to a part of the country and staying for like 3 months and just meeting people, maybe get a job and just kind of dig in and understand a place, a different place, and see what kind of art and music comes out of that. So we might end up doing some sort of like traveling inspired creative endeavor.
So what's next on the horizon other than the travel and these couple shows?
Well, I have, you know, I'm kind of feeling the downside of the Casper arc has kind of started, or I've crested or something. I've got 3 records recorded and ready to go that I don't know what to do with. I'm ahead of myself. I'm way ahead of myself.
I don't know that feeling.
I worked my tail off in the last year and a half writing songs and writing with my brother, who's a great writer, Tim Ballou. And I have all these amazing songs, and I guess I'm going to just sort of parse them out over the next 3 years, you know, make 3 records. But I have a lot of downtime now because of that. So I'm sort of starting what I think is my third act, which is visual artist. And I'm doing these black and white drawings that are kind of inspired by Inuit printmaking, which is something I did in art school. I went to art school and I did all these shapes, but they were very disconnected and not, they had no context. And these flowy kind of Matisse-like shapes. So I was like, well, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what that is. I'll just do music. And I went to art school to avoid music school. So it wasn't a surprise that I didn't become an artist. But about 6 years ago, Katie and I were in a bookstore and she handed me this calendar of Inuit printmaking. And I just turned on. I was like, that's it. I was drawing energy lines. That's it. That's it. And so it just started this like explosion of art. And so then in 2015, I really did a lot of art. And then for the next 3 years, I kind of didn't feel like it. And I was doing Casper a lot. But then just again, lately, I've got ideas. I've got visualizations. It's happening. I've got a bunch of shows coming up. I'm going to do the Rendezvous in Belltown in July.
Okay.
July 12th opening. And then I'm doing Snapdragon in March 2020. And I'm doing Easy Street Records in the new year in West Seattle. So I think I might be becoming an artist.
Wow.
I don't know.
Keeping everyone on their toes, Chris.
I'm just doing whatever the old intuition says to do.
Like that. You never know what's around the corner.
I have no idea. You know, but I do feel like the Casper thing, I can kind of feel it, especially, well, I think making records. I mean, there's only so many songs. There's only so many ways I can sing about bugs and animals and... You know, there's a lot of, I think I've about exhausted all the angles.
Mm.
I've even got a song that I've got for a new record where the premise of the song is that animals are calling me on my answering and leaving messages on my answering machine. Or no, I'm calling them. That's right. I'm calling animals and I'm getting their outgoing messages and then I'm asking them to join me and do fun stuff because two is one more than one. And that's that's the name of the song. Two is one more than one. Yeah. So that's... I mean, you know, I'm at that point where I'm calling animals on the phone. I mean, it's pretty good, but...
Well, you could sing, you have a song about banana bread. You could do, you know, food. Zucchini bread.
Zucchini bread. Yeah, right. I thought about doing a Casper Covers the President's album.
Oh, that would be fun.
Where I sort of neuter Casper songs, take the innuendo out and all that stuff. But I did a couple experiments. I tried it. And then without sort of the wink and the nod, the grown-up kind of, you know, the innocent meets innuendo, they're just not that great.
Okay.
I'd have to take the innuendo out and then put something else in there, and I don't know what that something else is. Mm-hmm. I think in the end, the letting the president's legacy stand is a better move.
Well, it's a good one. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, Chris, we've been ending every show with a fun quick-fire question round.
Okay.
Could you be game?
Let's game.
Awesome.
Let's game on.
Well, the first question is, do you have a favorite beverage here on Vashon?
That's a toss-up between two very different beverages.
Oh.
So I'm gonna say both. One is the martini up with a twist at May Kitchen. They know how to make a nice ice-cold giant martini.
Yeah.
The other is any juice at Pure, which is wonderful, you know, green. I like green with ginger, that kind of greeny ginger juice. So, you know, very different. But I guess one in my left hand and one in my right hand.
Yeah, that balances out. Yeah.
And I'll order the martini from May and I'll take it over to Pure and get the juice and then I'll stand exactly between the two.
That would make for a great photo.
Yeah.
And if you're not at home or working, which I think is one and the same,
right,
where can people most often find you on the island? Do you have any favorite haunts?
Snapdragon. Definitely. I love going to, Katie and I will go to Snapdragon, and sometimes we end up there for like 4 hours because an endless parade of friends come in. And that is, I love that.
I know. The back patio in the summer, too.
Love it. Yeah. I feel like Snapdragon is like the AAA league for minglement, for the roastery. You know, because the roastery is where the old timers hang out. So I feel like Snapdragon's like, you know, a training league. So eventually we'll end up with the roastery in our 70s. But for now, we're at Snapdragon.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, in training.
Yes. And do you have any pet peeves about island living?
Not yet.
Oh, really? Okay.
No. I mean, I guess there's a little bit of the whole ferry, like, you know, planning to leave. produces a little stress. And I'm working on that. I'm working on the whole idea of, like, Katie and I have started adopting this thing where we just go to the ferry and we don't know when the next ferry is. And we just go. We have stuff we can do. You know, I'll whip out the pen and paper and sketch, or, you know, watch a show on my phone or something. But yeah. So I guess that little bit of stress if you're trying to figure out, you know, if you don't want to miss the ferry thing.
Yeah. I guess when you're leaving the ferry, you can do that. Coming back, oh my gosh. I've been too often coming back from the airport thinking I'm going to get on 11:10 ferry or whatever and end up being there 2 minutes late and having to wait until
midnight. Or going to Southworth first
any
of that.
Yeah.
But, you know, the ferry also offers this buffer between the other side and this side, which I think a lot of people appreciate and enjoy. Also, I walk on the ferry. I'm one of those, like, get up on the deck and go round and round and round. Those people that other people who are sitting and eating Danishes look at and go, I hate you.
This is the third time you've walked by.
Well, I figure it's a good, you know, it's 20 minutes, a good vigorous 20-minute walk, you know. And
a little fresh air.
Yeah. So I use the ferry ride to... or run into people and talk and
awesome.
Or Kate and I have what we call ferry junk, which is we share a hot dog.
Ooh, as my brother-in-law calls it, a ferry dog.
Oh yeah. Kate always looks at me like, ferry junk.
That's great. And do you have a favorite Vashon Island tradition?
Well, I do, but I don't know if I want to say what it is because I don't want everyone to do
radar?
It.
Okay.
No, I'll say it. I'll say it. It's watching the 4th of July fireworks from the golf course. And it's getting more and more crowded every year. So, I mean, I think word's getting around naturally. And the golf course people seem to be super cool about it.
Yeah.
So, and it's a nice remove. You know, you can see the whole display and you don't have to deal with the, like, you know, Apocalypse Now.
Yeah.
Armageddon, Beyond Thunderdome experience.
It's so funny, Vashon being such a peaceful place. It turns into a madhouse on 4th of July.
Yeah. That one road going around the quartermaster.
Yeah, I'm scared of that.
Well, we have to drive that to get home. Or we couldn't. I guess I don't know if there is another way we could go because we're on the other side there. But even driving through it is just like, wow, what happened here?
I know.
just garbage and and spent bottle rockets and toddlers.
Yeah. I guess we're all so peaceful every other day of the year.
Yeah. You gotta have
like
your
the outlet.
You gotta have your yin and your yang. You gotta have your black and white. Yeah.
Intense. Well, the last question is, where can people find you to learn more about you and your work?
At my house.
No. Oh, okay. Come on over.
Well, let's see. There's babypantsmusic.com.
Okay.
That's the Baby Pants hub. There's chrisballew.org. That's B-A-L-L-E-W. That is where I have some of my artwork up, although it's the old batch. So there's a new batch coming. And I've got ambient music that I make that is for, it's like 15 to 20 minute long pieces that are for meditation or for having on in the background when you're being creative or writing or whatever. I get a lot of feedback that creative people are digging that stuff. So there's ambient music, and it's all for free. Ambient music for free, and then a whole bunch of other music that I've made that I just self-released for free, including old stuff from when I was a teenager and in college to new stuff I've made recently, which is kind of like I'll buy old thrift store records and cut them up and put them to breakbeats and make these bizarre. I call it Sampledelic. So there's Sampledelic music there, bunch of albums, and other collaborations. Anyway, and then there's kateendle.com, kateendle.com for Kate's artwork and her Etsy shop, which has amazing stuff. And she's at the market a few days a week. And she,
the Pike Place Market.
Pike Place Market. She lets people know when that's happening, so you can go see her there. And that's all.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for coming in today, Chris. This has been really fun.
Thanks for having me. Every day I sit down and talk about myself for an hour.
Yeah.
So I figured, you know, this is perfect because usually I do it alone.
Okay. Yes. Well, I'm happy to be a witness to
it. Okay, good.
Excellent. And thank you all for listening. Again, this is Inspired Island on Voice of Vashon, KVSH 101.9 FM LP. Until next time, stay inspired.